think most of us are familiar with Ezekiel 37, the Valley of Dry Bones. And it's certainly one of the more telling and explicit statements about the ability of God to bring about life. Ezekiel is standing, looking over a valley, and he sees death. He sees everything is dried up. And yet he is told by God to speak to the bones and to watch the bones come together. He tells him to speak again, and God brings about life to the bones. And it's a very telling time in Israel's history, maybe even just a very telling time for Ezekiel himself. Here's a guy who has been faithful to God. He has been faithful to telling the people of Israel all that they need to hear throughout this time of exile and throughout this period of time when God has brought the Babylonians to destroy their city, the city of Jerusalem, the temple, everything that represents God's promises and what God has done for them. So for Ezekiel to know and be reminded that God brings about life even from death, I think it's significant for Ezekiel. It's certainly significant for us because although God had punished the Israelites and sent them to Babylon, he was still, in his graciousness and in his steadfast love, he was still with them. He was still going to be good to his promises. Israel, though they felt dried up and hopeless, were not dried up and hopeless. That's the message. And the message is they were not dried up and hopeless because God is a God of life. And he can bring about new life where death occurs. And it provides, the valley itself is a good metaphor for us, isn't it? It's a good reminder for us, perhaps should we feel like we're going through that valley of death. Israel will have a future because of the Spirit of God. And that's the reason they will have a future. Can today's bones live? Can what seems like a society on the verge of a precipice of dying out continue to live? Will it fall off the cliff? What vision do you have for your future? Do you have the vision of the Valley of Dry Bones? Or do you have the vision of life coming from the Valley of Dry Bones? Sometimes maybe life just seems to go on and maybe there's sort of a long, lonely version or even a long, lonely vision of our lives. As Christians, as people trying to be faithful to the message and the ways of God, that can get pretty trying at times. I've got a bunch of things I want to talk about from, from the news, from various commentators this morning to kind of lead us to be reminded, even in the midst of what seems like a deterioration of our morals, God still has his Spirit present to bring about life. And I want that to be something that you burn into your brains. I want you to remember the Valley of Dry Bones above all else. Cardinal George of Chicago, before he died recently on April 17th, said, and I quote, "It is likely that I will die in my bed. My successor will die in prison. His successor will die executed in the public square. His successor will pick up the shards of a ruined society and slowly help rebuild civilization as the church has done so often in history." I don't know if Cardinal George's words are prophetic or not, but it certainly gives an interesting vision. I read one commentator this week who said, "I'm a short-term pessimist, long-term optimist." And you can be a long-term optimist because of the presence of the Spirit of God, even if you are a short-term pessimist, even if you see things going down in some bad ways. Several weeks ago, I mentioned a man by the name of Whitaker Chambers, who wrote a book called Witness in the early 50s. He had been a communist, had been a spy for the Communist Party, and he came out and he exposed several people in the government who were also spies, Alger Hiss being the more notable of those. And Alger Hiss thought he was bluffing when he tried to expose him. And when Alger Hiss took him to court, Whitaker Chambers had all the evidence, written evidence, documented evidence to prove it. And Alger Hiss got convicted of lying to a grand, perjury, I think it was. He got jettisoned from the government. He was no longer allowed to have any kind of job in any kind of government position. Whitaker Chambers had said that he had been converted to Christianity. And one of the things he kept saying was he felt like he was on the losing side, even though he believed in Christianity. And I think it had apparently been drummed into him by his communist teachers that, you know, communism was inevitable. Well, the interesting and I think ironic thing about Whitaker Chambers' life is he died long before he could see communism fall apart. But Alger Hiss didn't die before communism fell apart. And I know there's still places today who try to reassert all the views and values of the communist and socialist system. They've wrecked societies wherever they've been. But the fact is, Whitaker Chambers was not on the losing side. Again, I think it had been drummed into him that, you know, there was sort of this inevitable pace of history. And, you know, if anything, I'm kind of wondering if maybe the Israelites had some of the same problem. They felt like they had lost. It was their own fault, by the way, that they got sent into Babylon. But with God, they didn't lose. And with God, you don't lose. Even if short term you feel like a pessimist, you have long term optimism. We have, I think, even today, there are some seeds of hope. As I've read a lot of things, and as I keep reading things, I get newsletters and I read articles and I read magazines, and I'm just sort of a, I don't know, a journal junkie, I guess. I just try to read a lot. Okay, so I have a number of things to think about today. Okay, one article that I was looking at noted that. Recently, the New York Times, breathlessly as they are wont to do, declared that Christianity is on the decline in the United States. And it may be somewhat true, although they admitted, in raw numbers at least, evangelical Christianity has increased. I don't know on a percentage basis if it has done so, but in raw numbers at least. And I think sometimes we have to ask this question about Christianity. Is it Christianity that has declined, or the fluffy worldly nonsense that some churches serve up as the wrong thing? I think the latter is in decline, but I'm not so sure vigorous, strong Christianity is so much on the decline. The stronger and larger and more orthodox groups of Christianity are the ones that have resisted some of the pleas to perhaps... In many ways, I think one of the things that we do struggle with is to see how much the gay lobby has influenced even churches to celebrate gay marriages. And sorry, I just don't see that in the New Testament. It's just one of those things that I don't see how you can come up with that. But it seems like more and more churches are doing that. I don't think the larger churches are. There's no larger mainline congregation that is simply on the verge of doing that right at the present moment. And I have the suspicion that once the gay lobby kind of begins to bump heads with some of the denominations that are more Bible believing, I think they're going to run into a dead end. They're going to struggle with it, and we're going to be probably, you know, looked at askance, as we often are, but I think the case is very much that a lot of those churches, they're going to start resisting a little more. At least we should. Okay. Many people are beginning to push back, I think, on the religious liberty front. Let me just give you some examples, maybe to help you see the life coming into the Valley of Dry Bones, or at least something happening. Cultural conservatives, I'm going to read some of this. Cultural conservatives answered the left's attempted Chick-fil-A boycott a while back with a boycott. You remember that? They swamped stores nationwide when Chick-fil-A was criticized for saying what they did. It even caused some of the Chick-fil-A's to run out of food. So although they were criticized, there was a lot of people who said, wait a minute, we think they're right. Pressure against Hobby Lobby failed. Efforts to drive Phil Robertson off the air, even if Phil Robertson says some things that are a little outrageous. You know, when they tried to get him off the air, people rose up and said, no, why are you going to do that? Doesn't he have the right to say what he said? And guess what? They got him back on the air. I could give you any number of other things like that. You kind of have to read behind the news sometimes to see some of what's going on. Some of the people who are supportive of the views of more traditional ways of doing things. Okay, and I think it's important sometimes for us to see those things. I believe despite repeated attempts by people to browbeat Christians and bend the law to their will, the pro-life movement is still standing strong. And I think we have to see that. We have to be willing to see life coming into the dry bones. I think some of you, at least I'm pretty sure I sent most of you the good news newsletter that comes through Christian Chronicle. A couple of really interesting things in there about the Ukraine and about Romania that I thought were very, very interesting, that perhaps are those seeds of hope that we have to kind of see somewhat behind the news. One place in the Ukraine I can't even give you all the details here. Suffice it to say that the Ministry of Education in parts of Ukraine wanted more and more of the information, more and more of the things that were produced by Eastern European Mission about the Bible. Eastern European Mission is one of those ministries among Churches of Christ where we produce material in the languages of different countries in Eastern Europe. The Minister of Education in Ukraine wanted more of it. He wasn't trying to keep it out of the schools. He wanted it in the schools. Now, that's very interesting for a nation that was, at one time, communist and atheistic. That gives me some sense of hope. A second story, however, was from Romania. Some of you remember Claudiu, who was here, who was from Romania and lives there. And I got to read it. It's just too much good detail. I want you to hear this. David, a missionary in Romania, came up to me before one of our recent events and asked, "Do you have time for a story?" I answered, "Always." This is obviously the author writing this. He said, "The year was 2004 and we had just arrived in Romania. We were trying to decide how best to reach out to those beautiful people and decided the best approach would be through the children. EEM, Eastern European Mission, provided us with about 250 children's Bibles, and we began events where we handed out those Bibles." Now he said, "Fast forward to 2012. The church had outgrown any house or anything we can rent, and the Romanian leadership, or the elders, decided we needed to build a building and purchase land. We were then served a notice by the Romanian Orthodox Church had filed an official grievance against us with the city and were blocking our building plans. We were then called into a meeting with the mayor of our town. We arrived on the designated day with the Archdiocese of the Romanian Orthodox Church and waited for the mayor to enter the room. When he arrived, he said, 'I have read over all the documents and I feel that it's good for our town to have another church.' And then basically he said, 'This meeting is over.' The archdiocese was not happy, and we began to exit the room. The mayor pointed at me and said, 'Not you, sit down.' I replied nervously and politely, 'Yes, sir,' and sat down. After everyone else left, he said to me, quote, 'My granddaughter got one of those children's Bibles you handed out in 2004, and that Bible has changed our family life. You build that building and keep preaching Jesus and let me know if you need anything else from me.'" That's the mayor of the town. "Our church," David said, "has gone through a season of visioning and decided that God is calling us to hand deliver a Bible to all 7,000 households in our town. I told them that God would be providing the Bibles we needed through EEM." I'm not so sure any of those folks at that church could have ever foreseen that happening. But they can foresee God bringing life to dead bones. And that's an amazing story, is it not? Can we stand with that kind of thing when we have opportunities to speak, to talk about Bibles or to talk about what's in the Bible and to try to help people understand? Is not our voice important? Just as the voice of Ezekiel's was important to tell the people of Israel, look, God's not deserted you. You've deserted him. But God's not deserted you. God's Spirit can bring life where dead bones exist. We need to believe that. And that kind of brings me to John chapters 15 and 16. Because it was the Spirit of God that gave life to those dry bones. It was that same Spirit of God that Jesus promised to send to his disciples. God's breath in Ezekiel 37:11 gave life to the bones. And Jesus, in talking about that Spirit, referred to him as the Helper and the Spirit of Truth, who comes from the Father, John 15, 26 and 27. The word we sometimes use formally is paraclete, comes directly from the Greek word. It means to stand beside. And hence the word helper or advocate were words that, you know, translators came up with to try to understand just who the Holy Spirit was going to be. That particular term is frequently used in the New Testament to mean to exhort or to encourage. And that's a lot of what the Holy Spirit does, is it not? Jesus told his disciples, I will not leave you as orphans, but I'm going to come to you. God was telling Ezekiel, I'm not leaving you guys dead. I'm going to come and give life to you. And when Jesus tells his disciples about the Holy Spirit, I kind of wonder if they had that same idea in mind. I wonder if they remembered that story about the Valley of Dry Bones. Jesus and the Father are present with us in the Holy Spirit, the same breath of God that gave life to the dry bones. He is also the Spirit of Truth. Truth is not necessarily something that the world wants to hear. A world in darkness, a world that gets convicted of its sin, is often trying to run away from that truth. Jesus will go on to say in John 16, verses 8 through 11, that Holy Spirit is going to do just that. He's going to convict the world of sin. He's going to convict the world of sin because, he says, the world doesn't believe. Which is the classic sin, isn't it? Unbelief, as it's described, as we talked about this morning in the book of Hebrews. It's unbelief that is basically disobedience that causes people not to want to do what God says. It is a refusal to surrender heart and will to God's divine will and authority. It reaches its highest expression when people refuse to accept Jesus Christ and his words. That's kind of the final, I don't know if that's the final thing for God, like not going into the land of Canaan was the final straw for God in the Old Testament. He said, that's it. You guys don't answer this call. You're not getting in. Kind of wonder if the same thing is happening here with the call to believe Jesus Christ. It's kind of the last phase, the last step. Jesus will go on to say that the Holy Spirit convicts the world according to righteousness. And I believe that's because Jesus goes to the Father and won't be seen anymore. Jesus' departure and seating at God's right hand probably connects righteousness with believers, because now we have access to the Father. And it's a righteousness that we are given because Jesus has been here. And so the Holy Spirit is going to kind of make that clear for us and for all people. Jesus says he will convict the world of judgment. The ruler of this world is now judged, even we might even insert the word condemned. And you know, it's like when an animal is cornered is when they get the most vicious. And I tend to think that even if they're bold about it, I think deep inside people who want to maintain their sinful lifestyle know they're cornered. They know deep inside, though they don't want to admit it and let it come out, they're kind of cornered. And so they come out and they attack. They get vicious. They know they've lost. The spiritual powers that influence the world are now condemned by the power of the Holy Spirit. No wonder the demons were afraid of Jesus. They knew who he was. They knew what he had come to do. We need to remember not only the Valley of Dry Bones, we need to remember a rider on a white horse. Revelation chapter 19. The rider on the white horse comes in victory, leading an army We know who it is. The image is the image of Christ. But the really important image is what comes out of his mouth. What comes out of his mouth is a two-edged sword by which he slays the nations. See, Jesus' words are powerful. Jesus' words are the words of the Spirit of truth. People don't necessarily want to hear it, but we have the truth, and we need to be able to genuinely, respectfully, and I think even with confidence of ourselves that, you know, we need to be able to speak the truth. We need to have that confidence within ourselves, that vision that God is really doing something to try to maintain society and trying to change people's hearts. The Holy Spirit will speak. Jesus says he guided the disciples in all truth. He says he spoke by the authority of Christ and he declared all things that belong to Christ. The message we have is divine. We say that not because of our own personal righteousness. We certainly don't say it out of arrogance, but we say it out of confidence that what God has said is true. We need to maintain that. We need to have a vision of God's truth having its positive effect. Do we have a vision for our lives? Can we see the Valley of Dry Bones come to life? Do we have a vision for this church? Do we have enough of trust and faith in the Spirit of God that He can make, if indeed it's dry bones here, I'm not so sure it's all that dry, but can we see the church bigger here? At some point, maybe after I'm gone, maybe after I'm dead and gone. But you see, we have to lay a foundation. We have to be faithful to that foundation. Do you believe the Holy Spirit can breathe new life into us? I think you do. I think all of you sitting in this room believe that. But we need to act on it. We need to be able to wait for God. And I think sometimes God waits for us. You know, sometimes I think God waits for us to act in faith before He acts. He wants to see if we really believe. He wants to see us take some definitive steps to say, all right, God, we don't know how this is going to work out, but we trust you. We trust you because you're the God who can bring life from the Valley of Dry Bones. We'll just do what we can and cast our own vision for the future. Pray for the bones to live. Be confident in the power and work of the Holy Spirit to make it happen. Despite what you see going around you, God is active, alive, and at work. You're never going to see in the news about how great God is. It's just not going to happen, so you have to look behind it. Look for some of the other stories. Remember the Valley of Dry Bones. Remember the Holy Spirit that Jesus sent to us. Be confident in it. And be a part of the new life that comes about when God's Spirit breathes on humanity. Shall we stand and sing?